And you're out there pulling weeds.
Yeah.
Everything's growing.
Yeah, you should see our front yard. It is, it's all weeds right now. And we're supposed to get some fucking torrential downpours starting tomorrow. So, didn't get home as early as I wanted to. The episodes were longer than I wanted them to be. Got about an hour of weed pulling done. I probably have about four more left.
I know, when you said you were going to be pulling weeds, I was like, he's not watching the episodes right now? Like, we record in 10 minutes, and he's not watching the episode. I guess when you texted me, it was probably like an hour until we record.
Whenever I text you, I had just finished up the season 12 episode. I had, and before that, I had just finished the season 10 episode.
Yeah.
So,
I mean,
that's
pretty amazing. Then you had time to do something else, not run right to the record. Well, should we get going?
Might as well, yeah.
All right. I still have to ask. All right. Welcome to No Hugging, No Learning.
No, it's the show about one thing, watching Curb Your Enthusiasm for the first time.
I'm Tim Murphy.
And I'm Ted Hollowell.
And today we will be talking about Season 10, Episode 5, We've Reached the Middle, Insufficient Praise. But before that, what's the deal with stuff from our last episode, abbreviating it YNGTGMTSABAM, or you're not going to get me to say anything bad about Mickey. We really only had one bit of homework, and that was, what is Goat Williker? When Larry, you know.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Larry tells Jeff if he wanted it to be called, because they're arguing over whether a pilot can be a captain, and I guess Jeff just has no idea that that's possible. And so Larry's like, if you wanted to be called something else, what would you want to be called? And he says, Goat Williker. And he was like, well, then I'd call you Goat Williker. And then he says, Goat Williker does not give out his weight, and neither does Mrs. Williker, as Susie calls herself. And we were like, what the hell is going on? What is this? And basically the short answer is, I have no idea.
You couldn't find anything?
No, there was no reference to Goat Williker anywhere, except that led right back to Curb and people making jokes and about Goat Williker. So, yeah, absolutely no idea. I guess it's probably a play on G. Williker, like the non-curseword.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, G. Willikers, that's a great time. You know, so, but where he got Goat, I have no idea. I guess it's just a riff that Jeff came up with. It's not a reference to anything. It's a reference, not a reference. So, Goat Williker, I came up empty-handed. There are some other trivia and tidbits from the episode. This is the second time actor Timothy Oliphant plays a character named Mickey. It was also the name of his character in Scream 2.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right. I've never seen Scream 2.
Me neither.
I've only ever seen the first one.
Me too. It's pretty great.
You Scream 2.
And then someone put this in the goof section, I think. I don't know if it's actually... It sounds right, though. Pilots on charter flights do not ask for the weight of each passenger. Rather, they use a predetermined average weight per adult and per child. Also, the maximum weight limitation on an airplane is mostly an issue for takeoff performance, not for cruise. There's no way a pilot would take off if the plane is overweight. A lot of fuel is burned during takeoff and climb. The plane cannot be overweight in cruise since the plane is getting lighter by the minute due to burned fuel.
Ew.
And I think I remember you mentioning the fuel and how stopping midway, you know, didn't really make sense because you had less fuel then when you landed. I remember that coming up, and so I think you were kind of saying the same thing as that, as this trivia tidbit.
Kind of, yeah. I was saying, I'm like, why don't they just stop halfway, refuel, and they'll be fine? Like, what? They're just, it's not a sense of like, well, we're overweight. It's going to mess up the navigation. No, it's all about burning fuel. You add more fuel and you fix the fucking problem.
Yeah, but in this case, it stopping made no sense whatsoever because
you burned more fuel.
And then you're adding more fuel, AKA more weight, in order just to be, mostly just to take off again. Because once you're up there, you're essentially
going to be
zero.
Right back to where you fucking started.
Yeah. Like, if you land, the only reason you have to fuel up is so you have enough fuel to take off again. Like, yeah. So a little bit of aviation, you know, circular thought there from the episode. But again, it's nothing that a normie, you know, nothing that civilians like us would know. So it made... It pretty much made sense in the episode. Like, yeah, sure, you're overweight. Like, I've been on planes. I've been on, like, some of those little puddle jumpers where they're moving around people, like, hey, Quinn, you need to move up to the front, and these people need to move to the center, and these people need to move to the back. Have you ever been on a plane where they play musical chairs because of the weight distribution? Yeah, because they're like, well, we have too much weight up front. We need more weight in the back. And it's just for takeoff, I guess, which I never knew.
I'm sorry, sir. You are way too fat for row 30. Can we please move you up to first class? Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think that's it. Or they put you over the wing or something. You know, if they're they're like, we need to move people around because the weight distribution is off. I did do this a little bit of extra credit because I didn't know this was a movie until I looked at the connections from the episode. But Larry's suit at the wedding reminds Jeff of what I didn't know was a movie. He says, who are you, Our Man in Havana? And I thought that was just like a reference to a spy. What the way a spy would dress in Cuba, because he's dressed in like that all white crisp suit with like the fedora and stuff. Well, Our Man in Havana is a 1959 spy comedy movie based on a 1958 novel about pre-revolutionary Cuba. A guy named James Wormald, played by Alec Guinness, Obi-Wan Kenobi. He's a vacuum cleaner salesman, but he's recruited by a man named Hawthorne, played by Noel Coward, of the British Secret Intelligence Service to be their Havana operative. Instead of recruiting his own agents, he invents agents from men he knows only by sight, and he sketches plans for a rocket launching pad based on vacuum cleaner parts to increase his value to the service and procure more money for himself and his extravagant daughter, Millie. It also had Burl Ives and Maureen O'Hara. It was nominated for the Golden Globe for Best Picture, but it did not win. Carol Reed was nominated for Best Director by the Directors Guild of America. It is a dude, Carol, by the way, just in case, like me, you might have gone, wow, a woman director in 1959. Nope, no, guy director. One of those dude Carols from the
50s. One of those dude
like Carol
Carols.
O'Connor. Yeah.
Bro Carol.
Bro Carol. And he was nominated for Best Director, but they lost both of those awards to The Apartment, the movie The Apartment. So movie reference there, a little bit extra credit, a reference we didn't even know was a reference. And that's it.
That's it? We do got some news. You know, we didn't touch on it in the BS. It kind of does transcend news. I mean, we kind of touched on that in our shorty that we recorded for season 12 that is up over on Patreon. But very, very sad news that kind of caught a lot of people by surprise. I don't think anyone was really expecting it. I mean,
it's one of those things, even when you know the person's not doing well, it still comes as a shock.
Yeah, it comes as a shock of, like, when exactly it happens, but Richard Lewis died.
Yeah, Richard Lewis passed away February 27th at the age of 76. He died of a heart attack at his home in Los Angeles, and we'd known he hadn't been doing well for a very long time. In April of 2023, he announced that he had been living with Parkinson's since 2021, in fact. And so he wasn't going to perform anymore, and he was just going to, you know, focus on the acting and the writing and stuff. And so luckily Curb was a part of that, and he got all of his season 12 scenes done, you know, before the unfortunate happened. I do want to pull up Larry David's quote because it was
really something.
Yeah, let me see if it's in this NBC story about it. Because I like, let me mention first that as he does, and I'm glad he does this, because some people could see it as like crass or whatever, but whenever someone who has been on his show passes away, Marc Maron reposts the WTF with that person. He doesn't put any ads on it or anything. It's just like, you know, it's like watching a tribute on TV or whatever, like to someone who has passed away, you know? So I like when he posts those. And so I listened to the Richard Lewis episode, and it's absolutely hilarious. Richard almost can't. They talk about it in the episode, in fact, that Richard's the same guy on stage as he is off stage. And Richard's like, that's the only way I could do it. I can't, you know, be somebody. I can't have a different personality. Like, some people have to turn it up or they turn it down or they're just different. You know, we were talking about my energetic personality on the air versus sometimes I can, you know, versus a normal conversation, I can be very introverted or whatever. You know, Richard Lewis is just this. And so, you know, when you're listening to him talking to Marc Maron, it's like listening to him be on Curb or like listening to his stand up. Larry will say something and he'll take this sort of fake offense to it. Oh, why do you have to say it like that? You know, and start going off on a bit. But it's not a bit. It's just like the way he talks. You know, it's just, he just made it his personality, I guess. But it already was his personality. So he just, you know, just did it that way. Let me see. So this is a. This was a statement from HBO, who said that Richard's comedic brilliance, wit, and talent were unmatched. Richard will always be a cherished member of the HBO and Curb Your Enthusiasm families. Our heartfelt condolences go out to his family, friends, and all the fans who could count on Richard to brighten their days with laughter. Where is Larry's statement? Richard and I were born 3 days apart in the same hospital, and for most of my life, he's been like a brother to me. He had that rare combination of being the funniest person and also the sweetest, but today he made me sob, and for that, I'll never forgive him.
God
so,
damn.
Yeah, I know.
What
really
a great
statement.
What a great
yeah.
statement.
I know. Like, kind of getting a dig in, but really heartfelt, you know?
Really heartfelt, but in the most Larry David way possible.
Yeah. Yeah. But I highly recommend that WTF episode with Richard Lewis. It's just absolutely hilarious. And he talks a lot about Larry David. They were born in the same hospital, 3 days apart, like you said. They also went to the same summer camp, something they didn't realize until they were both stand-up comics in New York City. Like, they were just bullshitting one day and was like, oh, yeah, I used to go to the summer camp, All-American Sports or whatever. And Larry's like, I used to go to that summer camp. And then they realized that, like, they hated each other. They went to the summer camp and they were like enemies at this summer camp. And then all of a sudden they're adults and they realize that they're really good friends, but that they went to summer camp when they were kids and they hated each other. It's a really good story. But I recommend the whole thing. You really get to know Richard Lewis. And I want to shout out another great Richard Lewis performance. Of course, we love him on Curb, but as a kid, I was introduced to him as Prince John in Robin Hood Men in Tights with Cary Elwes.
Oh,
another
yeah.
great, you know, from the Seinfeld cinematic universe. But 1993's Men in Tights was absolutely hilarious to me. And when I saw Richard Lewis, I loved his vibe. He said this thing in the movie where he's like, you know, where he's going to marry Maid Marian, or if he doesn't, then he's going to hang Robin Hood. And he's like, so we're going to have a wedding or a hanging. Either way, we ought to have a pretty good time. And he does this little like shoulder arm shake. I'm like, oh, that's so funny. And then my parents were like, oh, yeah, that my parents obviously knew Richard Lewis from being a stand-up. They're like, oh, yeah, he's a famous stand-up comedian. I was like, I've never seen him, but he's absolutely hilarious. I love this. So very sad that he's passed.
We always get the catalog of work that he has with Curb Your Enthusiasm to go back and and watch. And obviously all of his old stand-up and all of his old movies. If you're really in your feels about Richard Lewis passing away, you got stuff to watch.
Yeah, I'd love to do Men in Tights one day.
I feel like that's the natural like next movie whenever we do get back to like movie reviews or something.
Yeah. Well, I know that, you know, we haven't even talked about this, I don't think, we might have mentioned it, but May 8th is when Frosted comes out. So, you know, we're going to have to do that one as well. Yeah.
Maybe my March is very hectic. Maybe we can do like Men in Tights. What's it called? Men in Tights?
Robin Hood Men in Tights, yeah.
Maybe we can do Robin Hood Men in Tights for April and do Frosted for May.
That'd be pretty sweet.
Dude. And then once I'm into summer, it'll be smooth sailing. Summer down here is so, like easy.
Oh, like, yeah, nice. Oh, because, like, all the college is out, right?
Well yeah, like, not to get back to radio or anything. Damn, we did like... Know, and also getting back to Richard Lewis, we did about 40 minutes only talking about radio.
Yeah, yeah.
But every other place that I've seen or I've talked to people in, summer is so busy because obviously kids are out of school and the parents get to go do things and you're out and about. You're at like a beach or something. Here is so dead because the town is so reliant on the university. Because there's 50,000 people that go there. During the summer, they leave. They're all back in fucking Houston or Austin or San Antonio or wherever the hell they live. Summer is dead here. My busy month is March. I've got 7 remotes this month.
Oh, geez.
Ugh. Anyway, any other like continuity that needs curbed or any other news or anything?
I don't think so, luckily. Okay. Thankfully.
Well, then... if you have never listened to us before, we are not a research-heavy show, despite the last... I'm unsure. I will go with the raw time, including the shorty on my record. So despite the last 59 minutes being almost exclusively research and bullshit... We like to have our questions pop up naturally in the run of the episode and assign them to ourselves the week following as though we are giving ourselves homework. I've never seen these episodes before. Tim has never seen these episodes before. If we miss anything, if we egregiously skip over anything, please send us an email or send us a tweet. It's @nohugging on Twitter, @nohugging_nolearning on Instagram, or nohuggingnolearningshow@gmail.com. All of those links are down in the description. If you like us, You can give us a 5-star rating and a written review on Apple Podcasts. You can give us a 5-star rating on Spotify, or if you like us a lot, you can join us over on Patreon, where for $5 a month, you get access to the It's a Hyundai tier, which comes with early access to extended versions of all of our episodes. In addition to that, we are recapping the season 12 episodes as they air in little tight shorty episodes, about like 20 minutes long or so. And those are going up the week of the episode coming out. At least now they are. Want to give a thanks to the people who are joining us over on Patreon. We got Dan, Liam M, Michael Klatsky, Nate Collins, Tamara Ortiz, the guys and gals over at the Ittyville Podcast, John Murphy, Danica Ligorio, J-Dog Conlord, Nick Kudla, Adam Webb, and Megan Stolarski. Thank you guys so much. If you want to join them, you can do so. Patreon.com/snowhugging and get your first 7 days for free. But Tim, they can also support the podcast another way, right?
Yes, start your own podcast journey today on Libsyn, L-I-B-S-Y-N. Go to Libsyn.com, use the promo code HUGGING, and get up to 2 months free. That's all I have time for.
Okay. All that being said, Season 10, Episode 5, Insufficient Praise, original air date, February 16th, 2020. And if you're looking at TV Guide that night, you are going to see Larry receives a problematic gift and causes trouble with Richard's new girlfriend.
Problematic gift. Why do I? Oh.
You forgot, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. But it happens like right away.
Well, here's the thing. When we think problematic gift, I mean, think back to Curb Your Enthusiasm. Think back to Seinfeld. I'm thinking like, oh, okay, it's going to be something racist.
Yeah.
It's going to be something really bad. I wouldn't call this problematic.
We might have to change that. Okay. I mean, it does cause him problems, but problematic is... Yeah.
In the very literal definition of problematic, it is, yes. Yeah. But how we know problematic, like, it didn't go out and sexually assault somebody. Yeah. It doesn't have allegations.
Right, right. If it had been like a... If the doll had been in blackface, not to spoiler, you know, that would be problematic.
not to spoil season 12 or anything.
Yeah. We might have to change that. We'll see. It does happen right away. So we open up at home. Larry and Leon are packing up. He's kind of going through. I thought they were moving, but he's actually going through his parents' belongings. I guess he has all of that, you know, ever
in,
since.
In his house? Is this like their attic or garage or something?
Yes. I think. Because the establishing shot was focused mainly on the garage, I think it is one of his three-car garage sections. Because we know he parks mostly on the street for some reason.
Yeah.
So he doesn't.
Got this big-ass garage, and he parks on this street in Los Angeles.
All his parents' shit is in the garage. I guess that's why he can't fit his car in there. So he's going through his parents' belongings, saying, I'm finally going to get rid of all this stuff. I loved the first conversation about his baseball glove. They find his baseball glove. And he talks about how, you know, he was like, I don't know what I was doing out there, you know, thinking I could field. And Leon's line where he's like, yeah, oh, well, I mean, you know, playing baseball with polio has got to be hard. And Larry's like, I didn't have polio, you asshole. And he's like, and then Leon's retort, every kid with that kind of glove had polio. Leon just knows those gloves existed in the age of polio. And so that's where every kid who had that kind of glove had polio, because it's not a modern baseball glove. It is a 1950s or maybe even before baseball glove. I love every kid who had that glove had polio. I just thought that was such a funny line. And Larry of Ding event, I didn't have polio, asshole. Like, well, you're old enough to have had polio, though. You got to admit. I just love the interaction there. Larry pulls out his mother's mink stole, and Leon's very impressed with that. He's like, oh, that comes from a classier time when guys used to call everybody toots and women used to say poo-poo-pa-doo. And that is total class to Leon. Larry is going to go to Clive Owen's one-man show because Jeff's new client is Clive Owen, and so Larry is going to, you know, kind of do Jeff a solid and go check out his show that's in previews. It's at this point that the doorbell rings, and it is the mailman, Lionel, who I don't think I mentioned. We know it's John Daly still, but I don't think I mentioned last time John Daly appeared that he is from Pittsburgh. I always like to shout him out. And that's why in the Ponsylvania sketches in on Kroll's show, he represented the Steel City, and Nick Kroll represented Philadelphia. So if you want to hear a good Pittsburgh accent, John Daly still got it in those sketches. He gives Larry a package and a knowing wink, like, have a good time. And Larry opens the package from Discreet Shipping. It's from Discreet Shipping.
Yeah.
And it says,
it's from a company called Discreet Shipping.
I love all these, you know, anytime you ordered anything from, you know, the back of a porno mag or whatever, they're always like, you know, or these days if you get like boner pills or whatever, it's not going to say like Viagra Warehouse on the front because you don't want your mailman to know that you can't get it up or whatever. And so this is, and maybe it's left over from those days, but you know, they'd always promise to ship discreetly. Like, discreet shipping is literally, I think, what they put in the ads. Like, it's just wrapped in brown paper, and so we ship it discreetly or whatever. And so, but naming the company Discreet Shipping kind of gives away the game. And as the mailman says, mailmen know later on. And it turns out it is a blow-up doll. And it is from Freddie Funkhauser, who now we're finally meeting. We've met him in season 12. Now we're meeting Freddie Funkhauser, Morty's half-brother.
Is that what he says? Is that what Larry says he is to Marty? His half-brother?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which, let me look now, because I meant to do this last night. So Bob Einstein, his age, he died at the age of 76. And how old do you think Vince Vaughn is?
In like present day or in 2020?
I guess we'll go with 2020. He was 49.
49 in 2020?
He's currently 53. So I guess it's
53.
Possible.
Okay.
Yeah. I guess it's possible to have a half brother that's 20 plus years older than you. It's especially with half brothers, I guess that's possible, but I thought that was, it's weird that he's Marty Funkhauser's brother and they're 20 years apart.
And you know, they're still still keeping up. Yeah, Marty's in China. He's doing great. Met a girl, not a doll.
Yeah, we find that out later.
I'm skipping forward a little bit. But yeah, just keeping up with the charade, I guess.
But this is where we first meet and we hear the name Freddie Funkhauser, and we get this new character in this episode. Over at Latte Larry's, we see on the wall already being advertised lower prices, no wobbly tables, hard scones. Those are their main bullet points, their main marketing points. Larry has redesigned the urinal. He's got his plumber there who's, you know, installing all the stuff. And he's like, I've got, you know, let me show you some designs here. He's elevated. It's got an elevated platform. So you're not standing in urine puddles, which Larry must encounter everywhere. And also, you kind of have a pee cube that has a door that opens up that will let you pee inside this thing. And then we'll close down, you know, to keep all the pee in there. And there'll be no toilets. There's no defecation. Only urination at Latte Larry's.
And the contractor that he has working for him is Andrew Santino.
Who's that?
He is on Dave, the Lil Dicky show on FX, but he's also got his own podcast, and he's very funny. He's a funny guy.
Yeah, I saw his name in the credits. I don't know, you know, I just because I watch and I remembered, but I don't know who that is. I have a friend who loves the show Dave, but I've never checked it out. But yeah, interesting. I did not recognize this guy.
What's his podcast that he does? It's what is it? It's Andrew Santino and
there's one called Bad Friends and also one called Whiskey Ginger. Are those?
Okay. Oh, okay. Is Bad Friends a podcast? Oh, that's the one that she listened to. It was Bad Friends. It's Andrew Santino and Bobby Lee from Mad TV.
And from Curb.
That's right. Oh my gosh. Wow. We're getting podcasters on Curb now? Holy shit. We're next, Tim. We're next.
That'd be awesome. And I like how the contractor is game to redesign centuries worth of urinal technology for Larry
he's
David.
He's totally down, to design this new urinal invention that, I mean, we get a little glimpse into this door acting as a guillotine. We never get the payoff, at least not yet.
Not yet. I think we will, but not yet. It's at this point that Ted and Mocha Joe stop by, and Ted is a new financial backer of Mocha Joe's because he wants to bury Larry David now, too, because as we know, in the last episode, Larry's affair with Cheryl was exposed. And so now Ted has a reason to spite Larry David. And so he's going to make sure that Mocha Joe can stay open to drive Larry broke or out of business or whatever. At the theater, it is Clive Owen in Kon-Tiki, which I do know is a novel, a story about a guy on a raft. I don't know. I don't know much about it, but it's in previews. And there are ladies just sobbing throughout this performance. He's like really nailing this, you know, despondent dude on a raft, one man show. It's going really well. Over at Jeff's, and this is the real Clive Owen, by the way. We get a great, you know, little Clive Owen cameo in this episode. Over at Jeff's, he makes, you know, Larry's raving about the show, and so Jeff makes Larry leave a message on Clive's phone telling him how much he likes it. And it's sort of a surprise to him. He just kind of hands him a phone as it's ringing. He's like, hey, it's Larry. I was at the show. You did a good job. Really liked it. And that's kind of the extent of the message. The Greens have a new housekeeper named Matilda, who is excellent and is even looking for new clients. I mean, Susie is so ecstatic. She can't stop complimenting Matilda. And you know, you see Matilda sort of wince as she leaves the room after compliments from Susie. And we do get the reason why. But, you know, Susie is like, oh, my God, you fucking... You ironed the fucking napkins. You're a fucking miracle worker. And
yeah, like, man, Susie's always swearing a lot. She's laying it on thick here. I even thought, like, okay, damn. Yeah, we get it. Yeah, you like the iron napkins.
It's
all
a
right.
Little much.
It's a little much. Take it back. God damn.
And she tells him that Larry can have Tuesdays and Thursdays, but Mondays and Wednesdays, that's their day. They need those days. And so Larry's like, yeah, that sounds great. I would love it. And she's like, and also keep Leon away from her. And Larry, that I can't guarantee. I like how everyone knows that Leon just has to fuck everything that moves.
Yes. Yes.
And maybe some things that don't, as we'll find out.
Ooh, yeah. Good segue. Thank God you. Damn.
Yeah. Another little foreshadowing there. Over in a newsstand, we meet Freddie Funkhauser, a.k.a. Vince Vaughn. He tells Larry that it wasn't a gag gift that he sent him. Like, he has a lot of these blow-up dolls, and it's great. You should give the blow-up doll a try. This is where we find out that Marty is still in China, and he met a girl, a Chinese woman, not a doll, as he says. But Vince Vaughn does love the blow-up dolls. I mean, not Vince Vaughn. Freddie Funkhauser loves the blow-up dolls. And Freddie's Uncle Moke is there buying pornography, and Larry clues him into free internet porn, and he's like, oh, my kids got me a computer. I don't know. He's like, anything you can get here, they have it better and free,
which
no one buys magazines anymore.
This is literally just a ripped off Family Guy joke.
Oh, really?
Really? This is an exact Family Guy joke, almost word for word, Tim.
Wow, I do seem to remember. Someone tells Peter that there's porn on the internet, right? And he didn't
know
that?
No, they tell Quagmire that there's porn on the internet because he's like bummed her because he like didn't. Let me see if I can find the bit. Family Guy.
Yeah. Is this the scene where, you know, he's in his house for like days and days and days and they finally go check on him and like one of his arms is gigantic, like his right arm is gigantic?
It's that's like the catch, the update, like where they find him. It's like days later. And yeah, he only like peeks out, but his right arm is just fucking jacked. Okay, let me see. Yeah, he's like, oh, check it out. I just got the new Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue. And Joe's like, oh, those don't excite me as much as they used to. Not since internet porn. And he's like, what do you mean internet porn? And but yeah, they're like, Quagmire, you of all people, we would have expected to know about this. And then they show him what it is. And then he disappears.
Yeah, he's
just not
in
to be
house.
Seen again for about a week. Yeah.
I do remember that now. Yeah,
and this
I
is from, I don't know what episode this is from, but it's like
a probably
while
like season
ago.
One. Yeah.
This was from season 8, episode 2, air date October 4th, 2009,
wow.
2009, titled Family Goy.
Wow. So, yeah, a while back.
A while back, yes.
And we even get the line, and I got to admit I laughed at it, maybe because I forgot that Family Guy bit, but where Uncle Moke goes, there's porn on the internet? I just thought it was funny that someone could be clueless about it. So it worked on me again.
It just took 15 years.
See, I had forgotten in the meantime. I probably hadn't seen that episode since 09. So.
Well, by the time you're, 56, you're going to think this is fucking hilarious all over again.
Yeah, or a new show can do the there's porn on the internet joke. Yes. And I'll just find it hilarious. Yeah.
You're gonna be buying an NFT that says there's porn on the internet. You're like, what? What do you mean porn on the internet?
Yeah, and then I'm going to trade it for... like a chicken breast or something, you know, trade it for food.
What do you mean there's porn in the metaverse?
There's porn in the metaverse? Legless, like amputee porn, because everyone's an amputee in the metaverse. No one has legs.
Jesus Christ.
I do want to mention we get some rare Curb Your Enthusiasm nudity. Like the only time we see nudity on this HBO show is when someone is consuming pornography. Remember his dad was watching it in his room one time?
That's right.
And there was another
porno
time.
Porno Gil.
Where he finds the Porno Gil tape and he watches it like at Jeff's place or something.
Yeah, that was season one, man.
Yeah, and then later when and his dad, and then we get this because we get a shot of the magazine open. Then Uncle Moke is reading.
I did see the TVMA for nudity. I'm like, what?
Yeah, is it gonna be like Larry in the shower again? Look,
I
all
hope
like
it's
Mr.
not
Burns.
Larry's no. ass. Yeah,
no, it's not. At lunch with the great Richard Lewis and his new girlfriend Carol, woman Carol, not dude Carol, like the director we were talking about earlier, who by the way is Isla Fisher. Gotta mention that. Yeah, another cameo. They are sitting at a table outside, but she's getting cold. And there's a table of seven next to Larry and Richard and Carol that will not let them turn the heat lamp on.
My God. And what dicks.
They're
Jesus
being real
Christ.
Assholes about it.
Yeah. Like, even the guy that throws his fucking napkin over, like, here, why don't you use this for a blanket? What the fuck, dude?
Yeah. I don't know what I would have done in that situation, but I would hope that it would be at least, like, you know, yell at them or something. Because, I mean, like... when you start getting physical, with somebody, you're like, what the hell?
I mean,
I would go over
there,
maybe flip their table. Maybe, like, pull the tablecloth.
Tim, the perfect response is there. He's throwing the napkin over so you can use it as a blanket because you're cold. You throw your water on him to cool him down.
Nice.
It's right there.
Perfect. Yeah. My response would be, oh, I need a little bit bigger blanket and go over and pull their tablecloth off with all of their food on it. So it all ends up on the floor. Like, oh, there we go. And then use that as a blanket.
And then you're just mimicking being a big old toasty cinnamon bun right over at your table. Yeah. Like, oh, this is so nice.
Yeah. But I know in real life I would fold like a deck of cards and not do any of that. But, you know. But we're in the, you know, this is the Curb metaverse. This is the Curbiverse.
The Curbiverse.
Where you can be anything you want to be. Yeah, because I couldn't believe what giant assholes they were. I mean, I would have turned that. Maybe all I would have done is turn the heat lamp up full blast. Maybe put one of their sleeves in it so they catch on fire. But yeah, they won't let them. So Larry offers, he's got in his car his mom's mink stole that he can lend to Carol so she can be warm. And when she puts it on, she tells this harrowing story of her mother getting hit by a subway car trying to rescue a mink stole just like that off of the tracks, but she didn't make it. And so she doesn't have anything really to remember her mother by. And so Larry gives her the mink stole. And she is just so grateful to have, you know, something that reminds her of her mother like this. And it's at that point that she realizes she has to go to work. And when she leaves, Richard Lewis tells Larry that she is a professional crier. She's hired for, you know, background work, but also funerals or weddings, anywhere you might need somebody who's a very believable crier to show up. And Larry realizes, well, as he puts it, and I don't know if he meant this as a pun, but I thought it was very funny, he was fleeced for a mink stole. I'm like, oh, that's another thing you can wear that keeps you warm. I don't think he meant it like that. I think it's just because I think that's too hack for Larry. You know, I don't think he would, but I liked that turn of phrase. I think I was just fleeced for my mink stole. And, you know, he's like, has she ever cried? You know, and Richard's like, how dare you accuse her of lying to get a mink stole like that? And he's like, let me ask you this. Has she ever cried during an argument? He's like, yeah, we were talking about where to eat. I wanted Italian. She wanted Chinese. And she wept openly. And he was like, let me guess. You had Chinese. They're like, yeah. And so she wept openly to win an argument with Richard Lewis. She's using this. She's a con crier. as Larry says. Yeah. And Larry wants his stole back. And so putting Richard in an awkward position. I noticed that I could see on the menu it said I Piatti was, I guess, the name of the restaurant that they were at, but I couldn't find any reference to a restaurant named that anywhere in Los Angeles. So no idea if it was actually real, or maybe that was just like the Piatti menu. I don't know what a Piatti is, but you know, for this particular restaurant that had a different name, I have no idea, but I couldn't find any information about it despite trying for a little bit. Back at home, the blow-up doll has been inflated. Larry told Leon to take care of it, and he did that by inflating it and just leaving it in the living room. Matilda is there, and she thinks it's kind of weird because this naked blow-up doll is there. And Larry says he collects them, and normally they come with clothes, but this one they didn't come with clothes. But he compares it – well, I think Matilda makes a comparison, and he agrees, like American Girl dolls. And Matilda obviously has led a very sheltered life, because if she doesn't recognize a blow-up doll when she sees one.
And she starts cleaning it because it's very dirty, gets right in front of it, face down in crotch level.
Oh my gosh.
Holy shit.
Yeah, and Matilda wants to switch days to Monday and Wednesday. Larry says he can't do it because those are Susie's days, but Matilda is leaving Susie because she is so vulgar. She can't stand the bad language that Susie uses in the house. And so, you know, she wants to work at Larry's on Monday and Wednesday. She's leaving Susie regardless. So Larry's like, well, okay, if you're going to leave anyway, me taking these days is inconsequential. So yeah, sure. Monday and Wednesday is fine. We find out that Leon blew up the doll, who he has named Sherry. So he blew up the doll. He's named the doll, but he takes offense that Larry implies that he has tapped the doll, because it is not something that Leon would do.
I wanted to point out, like, this was like very like in the first scene whenever they were like looking in the garage, a thing that Larry said about tapping that ass in black and white.
Oh yeah, that was funny.
Does he just think that everything was in black and white in the like 50s?
I think so. It reminds me of one of my favorite Calvin and Hobbes strips, where his dad explains to him why old stuff is in black and white, because he says the world was in black and white, and he's like, it turned color like sometime in the 50s or 60s or whatever, and even then it was kind of a grainy color, and he's like, well, why didn't all the pictures turn color when everything turned color? And he's like, well, remember, those are color pictures of a black and white world. So they, you know, the world was black and white, and it really confuses him. And I always liked that logic. I liked when his dad tried to confuse him with those kind of things. And so that one always stuck with me. It reminded me of Leon, you know, when Leon said that, yeah, tapping it in black and white, he might think that the world was black and white back then. But and I liked the bit where Leon looks down his nose. He's like, he's sort of like squaring up on Larry, but he does that thing where he tilts his head back and looks down his nose, like, what are you saying to me? You know, and Larry's like, why do you always look at me like that? And he tries looking at him like that, you know. And I liked that, you know, him calling out that. Richard Lewis comes by, and Carol broke up with him when he asked for the mink stole back. And as always, Richard Lewis thought this was the one. He saw a future with this girl.
Of course.
He saw having kids. And I love Larry's line, what, you're 200 years old, you're not gonna have a baby?
I could have seen finally having kids. Like, Richard, you're 70.
Yeah, I love that. And of course, during the breakup, she wept openly, because that's what she does. Larry still doesn't think she can cry sincerely.
And it's almost like Richard is the only person who doesn't pick up on the fact that, oh, well, of course she's not sincere about this. Everyone else is like, everyone else gets it.
Yeah, he believes her every time, and he gets mad if you accuse her of doing what she's great at to get her way. So over at Jeff's, Susie is pissed to find out that Matilda has left, and so she had to go get food from Metzler's. But Larry is psyched because he loves Metzler's. And Susie also has to clean up everything now that Matilda has left. But Larry offers to help clean up because he's an excellent dishwasher. Jeff objects to this.
What does he say? He's like, I can put my hands in scalding water and not feel anything. Larry, you should get that checked out. That's not good.
Severe nerve damage.
That's That's a very severe nerve issue in your hands.
But I got to say, if I'm good at one thing, it's washing dishes. I also love, and I love it too. I don't know why. I mean, I hate when I have to do it. Like, you know, when I come downstairs after the kids are in bed and there's like a sink full of dishes and I'm like, you know, because that's my job. And I'm like, oh, damn it. I just wanted to watch TV, but I guess I'll do this. But when I do it on my time, I really enjoy it. Like, it was not unusual in college to find me at a certain point, and maybe, you know, like when I had gotten a little tipsy, to be over by the sink, like washing dishes. And so people loved it too. They'd be like,
you drunk clean?
I would do drunk dishes.
Wow.
Yeah. And people loved it. They were like, thank you for, I'm like, you know what? I don't mind. It's really, you got some good soap and sponges here and I enjoy it. I'm enjoying myself. Yeah.
Tim, let me get your opinion then on the Sponge Daddy. Have you used the Sponge Daddy?
What is a Sponge Daddy?
You've never used a Sponge Daddy?
No.
Oh,
it's I don't think I'm sponge worthy.
It's just a sponge that you can get like either at like Target or Walmart or something.
Yeah.
It's just to do your dishes, but there's
the smiley face.
Yeah, it's the smiley face.
Yeah.
There's a Sponge Daddy. There's a Scrub Mommy. And there's there's a Scour Daddy, which is like a Brillo pad and sponge. There's and
what's the big deal about them? Are they supposed to be better than?
No, I mean it's all plastic. It's like a scratchy plastics, and it's all like eventually going down your drain anyway.
Yeah.
I like it because it's very durable.
Hmm. Now for my wand, I'm an OXO guy.
Ooh,
and I like
OXO is good. OXO is good.
I like the replaceable heads and I like, you know, filling it with the soap. I like filling the wand with soap and pushing the little button and then it, you know, it comes out. For my scrubbing sponges, I'm a Scotch-Brite man. Heavy duty, the green and yellow sponges. In case you want to know.
Okay. I did want to know, actually.
Yeah. That's what I like. So, and so just like Larry, but Jeff objects. He says that these hands have never washed a dish in your life. but Larry contends that he's an excellent dishwasher. Clive Owen comes over and he says the message was insufficient praise as we get the titular line of the episode. And Larry apologizes for the message, but he can't deliver a better one because it's sort of like performing now, you know, it's like, well, it's like when someone asks you to do an impression on command, you can't just like praise. You can't do praise on command. It's like an impression.
What was the impression he does here? Because it was awful.
His impression is Raymond Massey as Abraham Lincoln. I think I'm gonna have to write down Raymond Massey just to see who that is, because I can't say whether it's a bad or a good impression, because I have no idea who he's trying to do. I mean, I don't know if there are any actual recordings of Lincoln, but I know what, you know, Lincoln sounds like when people portray him in popular media. You know, I mean, there's the standard Lincoln that you might get in like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Mm-hmm. And then there's the what I guess I understand is a more historically accurate Lincoln that we got in Lincoln, the movie with Daniel Day-Lewis playing him, where he was sort of like, he had a little bit of a higher voice, not like this, oh, 20 years ago.
It was he doesn't need to sound like he's in Delocated.
But
no, I thought you were going to say, you know, a more accurate and historic portrayal, like Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Yes. Which I have seen. I enjoyed that movie. I think I remember enjoying that. He does do an impression on command, but he still cannot do praise on command. But he does give genuine praise to his sandwich from Metzler's, which Clive Owen tracks, saying like, oh, so you can praise a sandwich, but you still won't praise me. Larry's, you know, he's still trying to compliment something. He's like, well, you know, it seems like very grueling to do something like a one-man show, to be up there all by yourself for 90 minutes. And, you know, he essentially calls him crazy. It's crazy that someone would do something grueling like a play, which offends Clive to the point where he storms out of this nice Metzler's lunch. Over at Ted's, Lionel is dropping off the mail at Ted Danson's place, and he tells him that his friend Larry David is fucking a doll. He delivered a doll there, and he knew it was a doll because it was from Discreet Shipping. It said no puncture, and mailmen know. So Ted immediately runs to tell Cheryl what is going on with her ex.
Like, why does he care so much?
I think he thinks it would draw Cheryl back to him if he you know, it would maybe embarrass her to the point where she would want him back, maybe, or something like that. Yeah, because he's like, oh, because it's like the first time he's seen her, I think, since that ill-fated trip to Mexico. And he's like, you know, I'm just dropping by. You know, I know you don't really want to see me right now. I just want to tell you, your ex is fucking a doll. And then he runs off.
Am I getting confused with season 12 or season 10?
I know, right?
Oh, no, season 10 was the Mickey episode, right?
Yeah, right.
Okay.
So the affair was just exposed, yeah.
Did they break up then? Or
I think at the very least they're on a break.
Okay. I guess I was just under the assumption that they're living together.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, they were definitely, and that's the thing about Larry dropping Cheryl off at her house, and even Ted at the wedding saying, I found this under Cheryl's bed. It's interesting when he says that at the wedding, I clocked that. They were definitely, you know, spending the night a lot of times together, but they still had their own homes very close by, I guess, in the same neighborhood, because it looked like Ted. No, actually, he's got his car keys in his hand, so he did have to drive over to her house. Yeah.
Like, I thought he ran over in a fit of passion, too.
But then I just remember that he has his car keys in his hand, which is an interesting detail that they included. Over at Carol's, Larry is there to confront her about the mink stole, and she openly weeps once again, but Larry doesn't buy it. I like how patronizing he is, like, getting up close. He's like, oh, wow, look how you do that. Oh, yeah, I think I even see a tear, and, like, really patronizing her about it to the point where, like, she stops crying and, like, slaps him in the face. Like, get the fuck out of here. I thought that was a hilarious turn by Isla Fisher to, like, just turn it off and go, this isn't working. I've just got to resort to violence. This isn't working. I now choose violence, and just slaps him in the face. Over at the intersection of Wilbur and Ventura, I was able to see, thanks to American Lock and Key, which is still there at that intersection. Larry pulls up alongside Freddie, who tells him that Uncle Moke is now addicted to internet porn, and it's a big problem. Because he's not just on the free stuff now, he's in the chat rooms.
Well, yeah, because Larry says, like, oh, I'm sorry, I was trying to save him money. I was trying to save him money from keeping him buying internet or buying printed porn. And he's like, well, he's in the chat rooms now, so he's spending more money. This was so funny in how nonchalant Vince Vaughn was with this.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, you got to fix it. You're the one that did it. You got to fix it. He's like, oh, I don't know what to do. What can I do? And you got to come up with something. And then he even changes. Have you tried the doll yet? Larry is in charge of bringing Uncle Moke back to civilization. Over at Latte Larry's, the plumber has the P-Cube prototype done. And there's a little door that opens. And I don't remember if this is where they talked about it or whether it's earlier when he's talking about no defecation. But he's like, I guess they're worried about people shitting in the P-Cube. And so he's like, I could put a penis monitor in there where it's like, doot, 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 penis detected. It's just another instance of the plumber being like so game for redesigning a urinal and like putting all these, like, how does he know how to design a penis monitor? Is that something they teach you in trade school?
Like, I don't know. Like, yeah, what? That's plans, and that's coding and electronics. Yeah. Like, and sensors. You're not just like going up and picking up a penis sensor from Lowe's.
Yeah, no, you've got to design that exactly. Like,
I'm looking for a penis sensor, aisle 14. Thanks, man.
But he's excited to. He's excited to design a penis monitor. Doot, doot, doot. Jeff comes by, and Clive Owen is a mess. Larry's insufficient praise and the whole everything that happened at lunch is affecting his performance now, and nobody is weeping at the performance. It is, you know, it's bad. They open in 2 days. They can't, you know, they can't suffer any bad reviews. And Larry comes up with a brilliant idea to hire Carol, hire this professional crier to go in and get everybody. Once one person starts crying, it'll spread. I mean, they even compared it earlier in the episode to like someone doing what Clive Owen is doing and getting all those people crying must be like when a comedian gets laughs. And part of, you know, being in a comedy club is just being in that environment where everybody's laughing and like that sort of tribal mentality that takes over. Like, oh, everybody laughing is making this funnier. You know, it's different watching a comedy special on TV as opposed to being there watching a comedian. A half funny joke is going to be funnier in a comedy club than a killer joke will be when you're watching it on Amazon or Netflix or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's that same kind of thing. So we'll hire Carol. over at the theater, Clive is struggling. I mean, he is, you know, the performance is not where it should be until Carol starts doing her thing. And all the crying and the contagious crying brings Clive like really back to life to the point where he ends up with a standing ovation for his performance.
Standing and so ovation Kiki, and like, yeah, the whole like group of women right around Carol, like all bawling.
Yeah. Yeah, the magic is back, and Contiki is saved. Outside, Larry tries wrestling the mink from Carol, which draws the attention of a police officer, and Carol, of course, immediately starts fake crying, and which works completely. And Larry, they do have like a fake cry-off, which I thought was a hilarious part of the episode, because Larry starts trying to cry too, but his fake cry is awful.
His fake cry is literally just shrieking with loud pitches, no tears.
Yeah, yeah. Isla Fisher's is completely believable, and like, you know, I gotta put a spotlight on Isla Fisher's great fake crying. Like, she nails it every time. I mean, that's gotta be tough to do. I've never tried to do that before, but she really had to go on this show and convincingly fake cry over and over again.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It was really good. I don't know if an actor would say, yes, that was good fake crying, but on a civilian like me, it worked. I was like, that's really good fake crying, I think. Larry, of course, loses the fake cry off. And the police officer, you know, escorts him away from the scene. And then I like how, you know, Carol just sort of like dusts herself off and like, and just like goes about her business, like turns it on and off. I like that aspect of it too. And Clive comes over and introduces himself to Carol because he really appreciated, you know, the emotion that she felt during the play. And so they have a little meet cute there. Back at home, Larry he opens the hall closet and is attacked by Sherry, the blow up doll that comes out of the closet. He has told Leon now two or three times to take care of this doll. And he accuses Leon of fucking the doll. But Leon, you know, has to pretend that he doesn't care. What do you think was going on with Leon and the doll? Do you
think
someone was
absolutely fucking the doll? He was absolutely fucking the doll. Yes.
Yeah. What's weird is that he was cagey about it. What's weird that he was embarrassed about it. Because someone like Leon was like, yeah, you know, it was here. I figured, why not? I'd never done that before. Yeah, I'm going to fuck this blow up doll. Sure. But it's somehow beneath him, you know, to do. And so, you know, Leon says that he doesn't care, but now Larry has to take care of it. And so he tries to deflate the blow-up doll by jumping on top of it, essentially dry-humping it.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, you know, the best way to possibly deflate this thing, lay on it and thrust into it with your pelvis.
Yeah, just laying on it's not enough. You really have to thrust as well.
You really have got to get in there.
Yeah, and Matilda walks in on Larry doing this. She storms out. As she storms out, Cheryl walks in and sees that the story that Ted has told her is true. Larry is fucking a doll.
Like, he's only deeper into it whenever Cheryl comes in, because the doll's deflated a little bit more, but he's not even like pushing. He's just humping now. He's humping it to deflate. No other way of deflating it.
He's also moaning while he does it, which is something you don't have to do while you're deflating. He's like, ooh. Like, come on. You don't have to do that part of it. You can still hump it without moaning.
You can keep that to yourself, Larry.
Yeah. Jeff, over at Jeff's, Clive is there with Carol, and they're celebrating the great reviews that Contiki has gotten now that it's open. Matilda is back and cleaning, you know, Susie and Jeff's place. I guess she's okay, you know, because she needed the money, I guess. She's back there. Carol tells Clive that she is a professional crier, and Clive puts two and two together and turns and looks at Jeff. And I like Jeff's expression, his like, you know, like, well, you caught me. You know, kind of.
Sorry, you caught us.
Sorry.
Like instead of just like going with it and be like, oh, she's a what?
Whoa. Yeah.
I'm learning this for the first time just like you are.
Yeah.
Why did he have to like give up his spot?
I mean, he didn't say anything, but it was written all over. He had no poker face about it. So I guess that pretty much gave up the game, but you know, he didn't say anything. Outside, you know, Carol leaves because she's got to go to work. But outside, Clive confronts Carol, and they get in a fight that leads to the stole being thrown into the street as a truck comes by. And
Jesus Christ.
The truck is like Austin Powers steamroller bit distance away
like,
from.
Not only that, this truck is speeding up.
Yeah, that's true too. Yeah, once Carol goes out into the middle of the street to get the stole, this guy slams on the gas. Like, he was looking forward to hitting a person today.
Like, what the fuck?
But also,
like,
she has time to, like, look
car
at the stole.
Accelerating, yeah. Yes.
She has time to look at the stole, look at the truck. The truck has time to honk, and she has time to run out there and stop. And it really
and, like,
reminded me.
I think
me,
she looks back again, too.
Yeah. It reminds me of the Austin Powers steamroller bit, which I loved. I mean, Austin Powers, like, there was nothing funnier than that when I was in high school. But do you remember the part where the henchman is like,
no!
And Austin Powers is on the steamroller, and he's like,
the very long hallway,
move.
Yes.
Yeah. And the guy won't move. He's just like, no! Until he literally does roll him over, and, like, you hear the squishy sound of the steamroller. I thought that was just the funniest bit. Move! Out of the way! Move. And that's essentially what happens here with Isla Fisher. Interestingly enough, I got to mention, now that I don't know why Austin Powers made me think of this, but Isla Fisher and Vince Vaughn, of course, were in Wedding Crashers together.
Ooh.
She plays the stage 5 clinger. That,
that's
right. Yeah, Christopher Walken's daughter. How about that? Interesting.
That opens Wedding Crashers into a possible movie.
It definitely
territory,
does.
Which I have never seen.
What? Oh my gosh.
I know.
Yeah, there was nothing funnier in 2000 or whenever that came out. Yeah, hilarious. I'd love to watch that one again. Maybe June?
Maybe.
Wedding season? We'll see.
You said
2000?
That was 2005.
Oh, 2005, okay.
Yeah. I was like, there's no way it was that early.
Yeah. No, I knew it was post-college because I remember I was already in Harrisonburg when it came out. But yeah, 05. So the final scene is Larry dropping Sherry, the blow-up doll, at Uncle Moke's, telling him to stay off the internet, and that's when Frolic starts to play, and that's the end of the episode.
I did love the way that Larry, like, it's not like a threat, like, stay off the internet. It's like a, okay, here, stay off the internet.
Yeah, yeah, it's like,
and
hey,
Uncle Moke is looking
internet,
at this
kid.
Like it's a great Christmas present.
Oh, Uncle Moke can't wait to fuck that doll. Yeah. But I did like it was a very, like, hey, stay off the internet, kid. You know, like Mean Joe Green throwing that kid his jersey in the Coke commercial or whatever it was, like that. It was that kind of delivery.
Hey, kid, catch. Yeah. Thanks, Larry David, for the fuck doll.
Stay off the internet.
Sure thing, Mr. David. All right, Tim, what do we got for homework this week?
I wrote down, what is Larry's, hang on, I got, oh, Raymond Massey. Who is Raymond Massey? Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much it. There was something earlier that I was like, maybe I should talk about that. Contiki, but I don't really care. I remember reading Contiki or something like in, like, again, back in high school or something like that. I think we had to read a chapter. I don't remember how long it is. Maybe it's just a short story, but yeah, it's about a raft. Big wave breaks up a raft, some crap like that.
Cool. I guess, yeah. If you're into,
that's as much as I'm looking up.
Waves or
None
rafts, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. What do you like for cover art this week?
I mean, should it be something with the blow up doll?
I think it's gotta be, unless we get flagged for that. Although I could always just put our logo over like any obscene parts.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, yeah. Because it did have. It's weird because it didn't have the mouth that blow-up dolls normally have. You know, normally they have that O-shaped mouth.
Yeah, but no, it had nipples, a vagina, and an asshole, though.
Yeah, and yeah, I really thought that at first I was like, oh, wait, they just took a regular doll and, like, they glued these funny-looking breasts onto it. Because the breasts don't look like breasts.
No.
Like, they look like they're literally missile shaped. And then I was like, oh, maybe they just took a doll because they didn't want to put like a dirty blow up doll. But then, like, I definitely clocked the vagina at a certain point. I was like, oh, nope, there's the vagina.
That's definitely, definitely a sex doll. Yep.
But I guess it's for, you know, somebody who doesn't like oral. I guess. So yeah, that's definitely, maybe you can find one. I mean, maybe you can find Larry on top of it, even might be, you know, because he might be covering up the dirty parts and it might just be the legs, you know, wrapped around
trying to deflate it.
Trying to deflate, yes. Sherry. Yeah. yeah, because besides that, something with Carol crying. But I don't think you're going to beat the blow-up doll.
I don't think you're going to beat the blow-up doll. All right, let's see what we can do about this week's description.
All right.
So we had Larry receives a problematic gift and causes trouble with Richard's new girlfriend.
I mean, the second part's not bad, right?
No, I like that part. But yeah. Problematic gift, it's not problematic.
No, it's not. Let's see.
In the way that we know and use the term problematic, it's not.
I mean, you could, if you wanted to say pornographic, you could. But I think, what about like risque or bawdy?
Embarrassing.
Ooh, embarrassing. Yeah, I like embarrassing. Offensive?
Larry receives an embarrassing gift.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to be embarrassing.
Yeah, because it's not offensive, really, yeah. Either. I mean, but honestly, like you said earlier, it's not like the blow-up doll is in blackface.
Right. Yeah. So Larry receives an embarrassing gift, and I need to separate these two stories now because it sounds like the embarrassing gift causes trouble with Richard's girlfriend. Mm. So I maybe need a semicolon here. Larry receives an embarrassing gift.
Semicolon? Larry causes trouble for Richard's new girlfriend?
Is it with Richard's new girlfriend?
Yes, with Richard's new girlfriend.
Larry causes trouble with Richard's new girlfriend. I mean, I wouldn't mind reversing them, even though they don't happen in that order. Larry causes trouble with Richard's new girlfriend and receives an embarrassing gift.
There it is. There
I mean, it almost sounds like because he caused trouble with her, he got an embarrassing gift. But I don't know. Maybe there's no way around
it. I would decipher those as two different plot points.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I like it. I think that's it.
Okay. Sweet. I like it.
But Tim, that's just our human brains. Maybe computers can do something better. Let's go to Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yes, we'll put this prompt into ChatGPT. Please write a synopsis of episode 5 of season 10 of Curb Your Enthusiasm in sufficient praise. And let's see what machine learning can do. In episode 5 of season 10 of Curb Your Enthusiasm, titled Insufficient Praise, Larry David finds himself entangled in a series of awkward social situations as he navigates the delicate balance between giving praise and being genuine. Right, it's not bad. I mean, that's kind of true. After attending a dinner party, nope, we already lost it.
Nope.
Hosted by his friend Richard. Oh, well, he does have a meal with Richard. Larry inadvertently insults Richard's wife. Okay, Richard never married in the show. When he fails to offer sufficient praise for her cooking. This leads to tension between Larry and Richard, as well as a series of miscommunications and misunderstandings. Tension, miscommunications, and misunderstandings. Meanwhile, Larry tries to help his assistant Marilyn by writing her a recommendation letter, but his efforts backfire when Marilyn takes offense to his less than glowing praise. As Larry attempts to navigate these interpersonal challenges, he finds himself caught in a web of social expectations and comedic mishaps, ultimately learning valuable lessons. Nope, he never learns anything. About the importance of honesty and empathy in relationships. Could you imagine if Larry learned valuable lessons about the importance of honesty and empathy in relationships? What are they talking about? That's hilarious. That's one of the worst, I gotta say.
That's very bad. That's very bad.
Yep.
It really did it this time. All right. Well, Tim, did you like this episode?
I did like this episode. I got a lot of great laughs out of it. I can't give it a full star. I hesitate to even give it a star low. It was really enjoyable. I might, you know what I might give this, Ted?
What's that?
I might give this a star bell curve.
Ooh.
This might be the episode. And it's interesting that it happened in the middle of the season, and it is a middle of the road episode that I might judge all future episodes by. Was it better than Insufficient Praise?
Wow. So if it's better than this, it gets at least a star low.
Bingo. Yeah.
And if it's worse, it doesn't get anything.
Indeed. What about you?
Interesting. Okay. I mean, this is just another example of how our tastes of season 10 are not really aligning, because I gave this a full star.
Ayo.
Yeah. Wow. I thought this was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And maybe it's because of the Maybe it's because of the blow-up doll. I have no idea.
It was a funny sight. I mean, they're just a funny, there's a funny thing. I would say, like, the blow-up doll market has to be, what do you think, like 80% gag gift, 20% actual fuck dolls?
Probably. Yeah. I don't know. I've never actually guessed. That sounds correct. That sounds
like, I mean,
like
I feel like
accurate.
They're just, you buy them because you need something to throw around the Airbnb at bachelor parties, or, you know, you want something at the pool in your, at your bachelorette party. You know, it's like, I don't know. I feel like the people who buy them to actually have sex with is really low, but I could be, but maybe that's only because that's done behind closed doors. And the only time you see them is at parties and stuff.
Well, I think the people who are buying, you know, an object, a toy to fuck, they're not buying a sex doll. They're not buying a blow up doll.
Yeah. You think they're going to spend some money on it?
They're going to spend some money on it, you know?
Yeah.
There's so there's so many new technologies in, there's so many new fucking technologies.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, some of those dolls look, I mean, they've looked realistic for a long time. They've probably only gotten better. I haven't checked in a while, but I'm guessing that they're pretty close to,
You mean you don't get the daily email from adamandeve.com?
No, I don't. Ugh. I know. I've been waiting for them to sponsor us. Send us a free doll.
Send us something. AdamandEve.com. We'll do live reads. Absolutely.
Don't they still do podcasts? I haven't heard a podcast.
I think they do. I think they do. Yeah.
I would hope so.
Use promo code HUGGING. It's right there. Come on.
Yeah.
Use promo code HUGGING and get like 17 free gifts or whatever.
Send us a hug doll.
Send us a hug doll. Yeah. Yes. all right. Well, next week we have got season 10, episode 6, The Surprise Party. Original air date, February 23rd, 2020. And if you are looking in TV Guide that night, you are going to see Larry enlist the help of a new friend to ensure Jeff's surprise party doesn't go awry.
That's not bad. You get a lot in there. You get a new friend. You get the tension of trying to keep a surprise party secret. Pretty good synopsis. We'll see if it actually holds up. I know it has to do with a surprise party just from the preview, so it's got to be a big part of it. So, all right. Is that it?
Yeah, I think that's it.
All right. For No Hugging, No Learning, I'm Tim Murphy.
I'm Ted Hollowell. Be good.